Welcome to Spine Bifida Talks podcast. I'm disability lifestyle influencer Diamond. I'm here to share the real life stories of spina bifida warriors. Spina bifida is not always portrayed or talked about in the media the right and real way. So I'll be sharing my spina bifida story, experiences, important topics related to spina bifida and disability, interviewing my friends with spina bifida and other spina bifida warriors to share with the world what life is truly like with spina bifida, with one story at a time. Hey guys, welcome to Spina Bifida Talks. I'm disability lifestyle influencer Diamond. I'm here to share the real life stories of spina bifida warriors. And on today's episode, I talk with Mitra. She's 31 and does adaptive fitness with spina bifida myelomeningocele. Here is Mitra's spina bifida story.
I was born in 1989 with spina bifida myelomeningocele. My levels are L5-S1, and I was raised pretty similar to that of my older brother, but in any situation, you know, they were just a little bit more hesitant on what I was going to be able to do, because doctors really didn't think I'd be able to walk, or they weren't really sure what kind of quality of life I would have. But I started walking when I was about 2 years old, and I wore leg braces. And I think back then I did use a walker or some assistance. Mm-hmm. But then as I got into school, I only started just using the braces. I got rid of the assistance. And I think school was always a challenge. At least for when I was growing up, there wasn't a whole lot of inclusion. And so that was one of the things I struggled with the most. It was always the separated classes, classmates not really wanting to interact with me in certain situations.
I can relate.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, as a kid, you don't necessarily always see it, but, really looking back, I can tell, like, teachers didn't really have the information they needed to include everybody. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I dealt with that, and I wore braces until I was in, I believe, fifth grade. And then I made the conscious decision to just stop wearing braces and gain whatever leg strength I could so that I could continue walking independently. And that's kind of when I started my fitness journey, or at least a little bit of it. And so I gained the strength I needed and have been walking independently since then.
Okay, so going back to when you were born, mm-hmm. How did your parents find out that you were going to be born with spina bifida? And what was their outlook on it? What was their reaction?
I think they were living in Oshkosh at that time. And so their doctor, when they did an ultrasound, they noticed the spina bifida. And back then in 89, doctors weren't really familiar with it. They were just starting to have some cases like in Madison. And so my family ended up relocating to Madison to connect with more doctors and get more information. My parents' reaction, they were definitely hesitant and a little afraid of what could happen and, you know, all of the what ifs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, a lot of what ifs.
Yeah, but they definitely kept an open mind, and I don't want to say like hoped for the best, but that was like the outlook. That's what you had to keep that positivity there and not go down that negative path.
All right.
And so they just kept that mindset, and that's how I was always raised then.
Mm-hmm. Do you have siblings?
I have an older brother, yes.
So how was it growing up with him having a disability?
I would say it was not too much different. You know, we still did everything. I went hiking all the time. I was climbing rocks. I think the biggest things that were a challenge were if he wanted to go bike riding or rollerblading or, you know, things like that. Just from my personal experience, I didn't learn to do those things only because of my balance. Mm-hmm. And I just chose not to. But I think in some aspects, it also gave him a more understanding and opened his eyes to other people, you know, maybe in his grade that he didn't really acknowledge or realize.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it like changed that much because, you know, his friends came around and they knew I was different, but they accepted me for who I am and they didn't see me as any different. And that's kind of how he treated me.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really how it should be, is pushing people to what they can do instead of focusing solely on what they're not able to do.
Yes, it should definitely be that. So, as a child, what milestones help your parents to know, like, my baby is going to be okay having spina bifida?
I would say the walking to begin with, because doctors told them that I would be paralyzed from my waist down. I would have no control. I would be in a wheelchair. You know, and they were told all of these negative stigmas that get placed on a lot of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably the first thing. And then in school, when I made the decision to not wear my braces. And I mean, looking back on it, yes, it wasn't for the right reasons because I was dealing with bullying. And that's mainly the reason I stopped wearing them. But they respected my choice and stood behind me and helped me push for that leg strength. And they still continue to do that to this day. Thankfully they do share the same pretty similar mindset as me that you can't say you're not able to do something unless you try.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how they raised me. We focused on that and we just kept trying.
Yeah. So with spina bifida comes other medical conditions and different issues like bladder and cathing and, you know, just like you were talking about. So for you, what other medical conditions came along with spina bifida?
So I do have hydrocephalus.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not related to the bowels.
So you have a shunt?
Yes, I do.
Oh, wow. So... Yeah. How has it been having the shot? Like, have you had any issues with it? Or have you had any revisions?
I have not. I've had the same shunt for 30 years.
Wow. That's,
yeah,
that's incredible. Yeah, me too. I haven't had any issues with my shunt. So
I've just met so many people on Instagram who've had numerous, like, 10 shunt revisions. And, like, I just feel so, I mean, I'm thankful, you know?
Yes.
Like I definitely get headaches, but my headaches and migraines are more towards stress and, I cause them, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like I've gotten my shunt checked and there aren't any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But so other than the shunt, I would say I don't really have a lot of issues. I do have majority of control over my bladder and bowels. I do have a weaker bladder, mm-hmm. but I don't have any, I don't do cathing. I don't do any of that.
As far as your feeling, how is that, like, as far as, like, I guess, I don't want to say paralyzed, but
how's your feeling?
Yeah, how's your feeling range, like?
I can feel everything. There is just a certain, like, rectangle area behind my calves, but that is the only area that I can't feel.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I have majority feeling everywhere else.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, my feeling goes from the knee down,
and
I have some areas of my thighs that I can't feel.
Okay.
So my feeling is kind of like different. Like I can't feel touch, but I could feel like weight on my legs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
So different resistance. And what level are you? I'm sorry.
I'm not really sure what the level. I've always just said spine. I know they've taught me, like they've gave me like paper on it, but I've just been, you know, trying to like be simple with it, like it's spine.
No, that makes sense.
So with your spina bifida, how many surgeries have you had?
Only related to spina bifida, I've had three.
Wow.
Wait, three? Two? Two or three? Otherwise, the rest of my surgeries.
When you were younger or any, like, when you were older?
I think the oldest I was for my last spina bifida related one, I think I was 9.
Wow.
9 or 10, maybe.
Was there a surgery that you had that was hardest on you physically and mentally?
I mean, I personally don't remember my younger ones.
Right.
But so I would say the one that when I was 10, and that was my back revision.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, since that's the one I really remember, I would say that was the hardest. It was really painful. And I get a lot of anxiety around hospitals, and so being in the hospital is not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. Yeah, I definitely don't like being in hospital, so
it's just I don't even like the smell. That's how bad it's gotten.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yep.
So when you were in school, when you started school, how was your school system with you having a disability?
So when I mean, really young, pre-K and kindergarten, I was in a special education class. I wasn't like mainstream, I think, until second grade.
Mm-hmm.
I think second or third grade. And then, you know, you're in the main homeroom, and then then I had like a special education study hall or certain periods that I was with the special education program. And so from that point on, then I was completely mainstream, and I just had test taking, note takers, and like a special education room to go to for study halls.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your accommodations?
So for me, I needed the extra time on tests and a quiet room. And so that's usually why I ended up going to the special education room, because then I had the extended test taking time as well as a quiet environment.
Mm-hmm. And you were able to keep that when you transferred over to.
Yes, I kept that regimen until I was a freshman or sophomore in high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I think sophomore. I believe it was sophomore, but I definitely kept the note takers. I've had note takers through all of my schooling, even in college.
Okay. So once you transferred over, what changed as far as your accommodations?
That would be my parents, because they worked really hard at home with me to help me study, help me learn, you know, help me try to remember things. And so a lot of it just came down to myself. I didn't need all of that support anymore. I didn't need it. It was still there in the background if I needed it,
mm-hmm.
but because I worked hard on my own, I was able to step back and get away from that a little bit.
Did you have a favorite subject in school?
I don't know. I liked most of them. I just didn't like science and math.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
science. Those are the hardest ones for me.
Not my strong suit, neither.
Yeah, no. No. I liked English. That was good.
How was your transition from elementary school to high school?
It was a little rough, but that transition was actually the breaking point that I needed, because I had started dealing with bullying for 2 years in elementary school, and then it kind of carried over into freshman year of high school. But that's kind of where my mentality flipped a switch, mm-hmm. and I kind of just stopped showing them that it was affecting me. I started standing up to the bullies. I started showing them that this was not okay, that that's kind of where I found my voice, and I started speaking up for others.
Wow, that's great.
It definitely didn't, you know, happen overnight, and I still dealt with bullying my freshman year, but by sophomore year, it was done. Like, it was like nothing ever happened.
Wow, that's great to hear. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
not a lot of people with disabilities can overcome their bullying like that. So I think that's great
definitely.
To hear.
Yeah, and that's why I try to be that voice for the ones who can't speak up, because it is hard. It's very hard.
Yes.
When you're with classmates who don't exactly see eye to eye with you, and when you're trying to get them to understand, it's hard. I mean, it's hard for anybody, whether you have a disability or not.
Mm-hmm. So how was your social life other than the bullying?
I was not social at all. I had a group of, like, I want to say 5 or 6 friends, and that's kind of who I kept to. Mm-hmm.
Well, you still have,
like,
friends.
Right. Like, I smiled at people in the hallway, and, you know, I said hi, but I wasn't really social. Like, people knew of me, like, all of my classmates knew of me, but I wouldn't say that we were acquaintances or friends. That didn't really change much all through high school, I would say. Mm-hmm. And that's mainly on me, because I was so shy and, like, I don't know what the right word is. I was just so afraid of my disability and acceptance, you mm-hmm. know? After dealing with bullying, even though I stood up to them, I still had a lot of that self-consciousness to get over.
All right. Yeah, because that definitely can mess with you. So, yeah, I could definitely understand that it's a process.
Yeah, and, like, I didn't initially feel it after I stood up. It took, like, a year to 2 years for it to, like, mentally hit me. And then it was another process of trying to get over that.
Mm-hmm. So, as far as, like, dating, how has that journey been for you?
I wasn't dating until I met Danny.
Wow.
I had never been on a date, honestly, like, guys, not to sound mean, but, like, guys didn't talk to me. I think maybe throughout school, if a guy talked to me, it felt like they were just doing it out of pity.
Mm-hmm.
I did have one guy friend. We weren't friends in high school, but he always went out of his way to be nice to me. He always said hi to me. He helped me in gym class, things like that.
Wow. So how old were y'all when y'all met, and how was it like, you know, growing to a relationship?
So we actually met on Instagram.
Wow.
And okay. So I was searching for fitness tips with living with a disability, and I came across one of Danny's pictures. And so I just commented on it, and I was asking like how he was able to do that. And so we just started a conversation that way. Mm-hmm. And then we like started talking in private messages and then added each other on all the other social medias.
Mm-hmm.
But so because I don't have any other experiences to go off of, I don't know like how different it is. It just felt, for me and my personal experience, it just felt better to find someone who understood what I was going through.
Yeah.
Who, you know, who could understand if I'm in pain because of spina bifida, or if I'm frustrated with something related to spina bifida, at least they would understand what I'm going through.
So what's his disability?
He has spina bifida. He has the same level as
wow.
I do.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and I mean, it was really shocking when I found out how far away he was, but, you know, because when we met in 2015, I was living in Wisconsin, and he was living in Brazil.
Wow, that is far.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. So for we you kept guys a long distance to make a long distance relationship yeah. work.
Oh yeah, I mean we did it for 3 years until he moved
wow,
here.
Wow, 3 years. That is yep. just beautiful.
Yeah, I mean it was difficult, but you know, if you really want something, you have to make it work, and you have to see past all of the challenges.
Yes. What age did you start to understand your own disability and want to do your own research on it?
I would say from early on. My parents have always taught me about my spine, about my disability. Like I've been researching it for years. I think though, for me personally, getting involved in the community and really wanting to make a difference, that was maybe 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then I really became active and trying to connect with others and, you know, just sharing my experience, even though I can't say that my experience has been more challenging than others. Mm-hmm. I feel like we can still connect and share based on each of our experiences.
How do you think social media has helped the disability community as far as having us come together and know that we're not the only ones with this disability, that there's others like us out there?
I think it's been amazing. Through social media, I've been able to create a Instagram chat where we've connected with people from all over the world. We can share our experiences, help each other out going through difficulties. I think it just gives everybody a new perspective that they might not have thought mm-hmm. of. I mean, and for some, they may have never spoken to somebody else with the same disability. And so that could open their eyes to a whole new world that they never thought
yes,
of.
Yes, I get that all the time. I meet new people who's like, I never met somebody with spina bifida. And I'm like, wow.
But I mean, it is true. Like for me growing up, I don't think I had met someone till I was maybe 8. But I used to go to conferences and different local events that we used to host mm-hmm. here. But I mean, past that point, like high school and on, I didn't meet really anybody with spina mm-hmm. bifida. It wasn't until I got into college and one of my first like real jobs, then I met people with spina bifida. Then I met Danny, mm-hmm. you know? So like from there, it kind of just progressed. Yeah.
For me, I really didn't know I was around people with the same disability as me until I would like go to the doctor. But being in school, I was in special ed. So I was around people like me, but I didn't know it. because it wasn't like we were just gonna ask each other, you know, hey, what's your disability? You know, it was just like, okay, we all have disabilities and we all in this together, you know.
Right, right. It's not just, it's not a common that you're going to just go up to somebody randomly and
yeah,
ask.
Plus we're kids, so it's like, we don't know how to ask that. You know, that it's not going to come
exactly
across our mind. Like, hey, you're cool, I'm cool, let's, you know, be friends.
Well, and you're also just, I feel like in the school age, you're also just in that awkward age of you want to make friends, but you also don't want to come across as, I'm going to be awkward and just ask you 20 questions.
Yeah.
And I definitely know I struggled with that. And, you know, because I didn't want to always, I couldn't find it in myself to be that first person to say hi. But now I'm just that awkward person who does.
So are you living independently?
Yes, I've been living independently since I graduated college.
Wow. So going back to that, what was your college experience like?
So I went to a local small college. That was my only deal with going to college, was that I needed to be small. I wanted to be able to walk, you know, to each building without too much trouble. So, yeah, I went to a local college, Edgewood College here. And, I mean, I had a pretty good experience. I still did the, what do you call it, the note takers. And I did get the extra time I needed for tests and stuff. But it was definitely eye-opening, because I had just graduated from high school where, you know, you had cliques and, you know, everybody had their place. And while college, you do have that to some degree, they were so much more open to, yeah, we're going to have our own cliques, but we're still going to say hi to you. Yeah, we're still going to accept you. And that was really an eye-opening thing for me. Because I didn't really expect that. I hadn't seen that before. So it was just,
yeah,
it was shocking.
So what did you study?
So originally when I went to school, it was for early childhood, regular and special ed. But by the time I graduated, it was just for studies and education.
Wow. So how did your parents feel about you going to college?
Oh, they always wanted it. They always did. And I lived at home with during college, so they continued to help me where they could with studying for tests, homework, you know, whatever help I needed. And so they continued to push me to do the best I could. And I mean, they always wanted me to go on to college. And I think if they had it their way, I'd be going on to graduate school, but I don't want to do more schooling.
Yeah, I could definitely understand that. So that's great that your parents were so helpful, you know.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, looking back, my dad was a stay-at-home dad primarily, and so, like, he really helped me get through school, and I don't think I would have made it that far if they hadn't done that.
So as far as living on your own, what was like the preparation for that? Like, did you have to go through any preparation, or was it just like, I'm doing this now?
No. So when I first moved out, I moved, let's see, the very first time I moved out, I technically didn't move independently. Once I graduated from college, I became a live-in peer mentor. So I moved out of my parents, but then I moved into a house and lived with three girls who have disabilities. And so I became their live-in peer mentor and helped them cooking, cleaning, teaching them how to be independent.
That's great.
So not only did I have to learn independence, but I had to teach others how to.
As you're learning, you have to learn and pass on
but
what
I mean,
you're learning.
Right. And I mean, there were definitely rocky points, but I do feel like it came quite naturally. only because I was raised so independent.
So what goals do you have for yourself as far as independence and any other of your goals as you get older?
I'm pretty independent right now. So I don't think there's a lot more independence or independent goals I have. It would just be more so goals. Like I have adaptive fitness goals that I want to do. My goal is to create a nonprofit for adaptive fitness.
Wow.
I do want to start. I'm in the process of trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out how to work from home. So like I have just minor personal goals that I'm working towards.
So as far as like supporting yourself, have you ever had a job and, you know, experiencing like the workforce?
Oh yes, I've had a job since I was a sophomore or junior in high school. So when I first started, I was a cashier. No, that wasn't my first job. I think I first started my first job, I was at like a floral place or something. That one didn't last very long, but then I became a cashier at a grocery store. And so I did that for nine years. I did that one during school. And then once I became the live-in peer mentor, I did that on the weekends as well. So I was working two jobs, actually.
Wow. Yeah, that's wonderful because for a lot of people with disabilities, it's hard for them to obtain jobs. So it's just great to hear, like, you've had so many jobs. So what was going through that like for you?
I would not recommend it to anyone. So during college, I technically had three. So I had the live-in peer mentor job. Then I had the cashiering job on the weekends. But then three times a week, I taught a independent living class.
Wow. So you were doing a lot.
I definitely wouldn't recommend. Yeah. So I definitely wouldn't recommend that to anyone. But, I mean, they really helped me understand where my passions lie, what I actually want to do in my life. You know, like it really helped me get a clearer picture of what I see for my future.
That's great.
Yeah.
So
it was fun.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, that's a lot of work, but if you can find your passion from it and it's fun, then you're doing what's right.
Exactly. Yep.
So as far as like access and transportation and driving, how are you able to get around and do things that you love to do?
I drive. I don't have any adaptations to my car. I just take it, you know, I just drive a little bit more cautious. I do have like the reflexes to move my leg. I just always am more cautious of making sure I have enough space just in case I need to brake quickly or if my foot's not going to move, you know, like those kind of things. So I don't really have any restrictions that way. If it was up to me, I would never take a bus or like public transportation. Those give me so much anxiety. Like I just don't want to do them. But no, so I've been pretty independent in that sense.
Yeah, public transportation can be a hassle when it comes to having a disability. Like such a struggle.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I try to avoid it.
When it comes to your identity with spina bifida, how do you identify yourself when it comes to person first versus identity first?
I guess, what do you mean? I guess I identify as I am an individual with
spina bifida. Yeah, so that would be person first. Like, you're not just a person with a disability, there's more to you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're just your spina bifida doesn't define you. It's just a part of you.
Yeah. Same for me. What word would you use to describe your life living with spina bifida, and why is that for you?
I don't know that there's just a word. I always go back to the phrase that Danny and I created, okay, which is rides above. And that's what, I mean, really, ideally, that's what my life has been. I've always risen above any challenge that has been placed in front of me. I've always risen above any goal I have put for myself.
Definitely.
You know, and even if that means adapting to get to that goal, you're still going forward. So I would say rise above. I know that's not one word, but...
What are some misconceptions about spina bifida from your experience?
That you have spina bifida, so you can't walk. I don't know. I see so many people thinking that spina bifida, everybody's the same. So if they see one person in the wheelchair and then they see like me, then they're shocked that I'm not in a wheelchair. Or, you know, or they're shocked that I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but those are some great ones that I definitely can relate to. People are not that educated on spina bifida, and they don't know that there are different types, and people with spina bifida are not all the same.
Well, and that's just the thing. Like, I mean, Danny and I literally have the same level, you know, and but when you visually see us, we look completely different. Which is why, I mean, I always say you can't judge a book by its cover, because you don't know the backstory.
Do you ever get approached in public about your disability?
I wish they would approach me. Followed. I've been followed. Oh, yeah. It's lots of fun. You know, makes you really want to be in public alone. I've been followed at the grocery store before. Danny and I have been followed just walking along the street.
Well, they'll just watch you?
So the one time in the grocery store, they wouldn't really explain. I ended up getting a staff member to go talk to them because, like, I was afraid. It was a man. And I was like, well, he's following me. He's been following me for, like, six aisles. And like, I've been followed by women, and like some of them I do confront and others I don't, but half the time, the only response I get from them, well, you walk different. Okay.
Right.
Why do you have to follow
me
because of that?
Doesn't make any sense.
No. And so that's why I'm really trying to work on changing the stigma around disabilities. Like, people think that it's something to be afraid of. And it really shouldn't be. I mean, one time I know Danny and I were walking out in public in another town close to us, and we were followed by a gentleman, and he did finally come up to us and talk, but all he wanted to know was why we were walking the way we do, why Danny's foot looked different, and like he wanted to be able to pray for Danny.
How did you feel about that?
I mean, he was like, yeah, you know, at first he was like, sure, that's fine. Cause he assumed that the gentleman would go to wherever and pray for Danny, you know, but no, he wanted Danny to sit down and he wanted to hold Danny's foot and pray that the leg would grow.
Inappropriate.
Exactly. And at the time, I mean, yes, it was awkward and we were trying not to laugh, but at the time I wish we had really said, I appreciate your thoughts, but we are okay with how we are. You know what I mean? I think though in the situation, it's kind of hard to really step up and be like, I get where you're coming from, but no.
You know, not be disrespectful, but you want them to understand how you see the situation.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it's just, that's the thing I think that's been the most frustrating for me is trying to get people to understand that it's not something to feel sorry for or take pity.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need your pity.
You can't stop somebody like that. And
I don't pity my
life.
I think
it's just okay to pray out in the open like that. Like,
And hold their foot. Exactly.
I've definitely had those situations where people want to stop me and pray for me. And I'm like, this is not appropriate, but I'm trying to be respectful.
Right. Yeah. You know, so it's like, I appreciate your thought, but this isn't the time or the place. But I think it's also, you know, each person, how you're going to react is different. I just think, though, even if you're frustrated by the situation, you still do need to react positively. Because we need to respect that they acknowledge that, yes, we're different. Okay, that's great. But let's help them understand why we're different. Let's help them understand why we walk the way we do or how we get around. You know, I think that part needs to be a little bit more clear nationwide. To don't be afraid to ask. Like, don't assume, but ask us. And I think that's going to start slowly, but that would be my goal.
In what ways do you like to help bring awareness and education about spina bifida?
So I primarily do that with my adaptive fitness, whether that is showing my workouts that I do, whether that's when I do my challenges like my 5K races or the Red Bull 400. I talk about my experiences with bullying, and that's a lot of what I do when I try to reach out to people. I meet them at the level where they're at, and I try to work on it from there.
That's wonderful.
I try really hard not to, I don't want to come across as flaunting. I've been told that I can't inspire someone else because I'm not as disabled. Like, I don't want to come across as I'm flaunting, I can walk and you can't. I try to meet people whatever level they're at, I try to meet them where they're at and help them rise to whatever they want to do. And so I guess that's my ultimate mission and goal behind everything I do.
It's like when we try to do something positive for someone else like us and other people like us, it can come off as negative when, you know, all we're trying to do is just help, because if we don't, who else will?
Well, exactly. But I get that all of the time. I try so hard to like reach out to parents and share our journey, share our story, share my struggles, because I struggle. I don't think people realize how much I struggle. And I always get met with, well, you're not disabled enough.
No.
That's not helping. Everybody, even if I'm not in a wheelchair, even if I'm not paralyzed, that's not up to you to say that I can't help somebody else. And so I think we need to be more open to listening and not so quick to judge.
I mean, yeah, we'll
hopefully we'll get there.
It's going to take some time, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
What would you tell a young girl or boy growing up with spina bifida?
Oh, I would tell them a lot of things. I would tell them to follow their own heart and not to listen to the misconceptions that the world, that doctors tell you, that you need to try your best. Keep pushing. If you aren't able to do, say, A, we'll try B. There's always a way to accomplish your goals. They have to keep going. I feel like so many people get so flustered and frustrated when they try one route and it doesn't work.
Doing anything.
Exactly. And just, I mean, a perfect example. Last year, Danny and I attended a spina bifida meetup where we met two young girls. I believe they were 9 years old. And we met them at a playground, and one of them, who was in a wheelchair, she really wanted to climb this rope ladder so she could join everybody at the top. And her parents were hesitant. They were like, oh, no, it's really high. Like, I don't want you to fall. You know, normal parent hesitations. And so Danny and I worked with her. We were like, no, we'll be right alongside you. We'll have one person behind you. We'll catch you. Like, you will be safe. We want you to try your hardest, you know, and we talk to her and try to help show her that she can push past this fear. And I mean, she did it. She climbed the rope ladder, got to the top. I mean, the face of happiness that she showed, like, that's the reason I do it, because she was so ecstatic and happy and proud of herself. Like, I just want people to be able to push through that barrier so that they can understand, yes, it's going to be frightening. Yes, it's completely out of your comfort zone. But once you get past that, it opens your eyes to so many other things
really
you maybe thought you couldn't do.
You are until you try something.
I mean, if everybody who fell down just gave up, I don't think anybody would have a job. Mm-hmm. You know? You're going to fall. That's part of life.
What's one important life lesson that your disability has taught you?
To keep moving forward. The only direction you can go is up. So every time you fall, pick yourself right back up and you learned a lesson. You learned what not to do next time.
What do you want people to know and understand about spina bifida?
That it's not as scary and life-threatening as everybody makes it out to be. I hear so many parents saying doctors are telling them that their child won't do this. Their child won't do this. We need to focus on what their child will do. Like, I was told I wasn't going to walk, but here I am. Okay, doctors, you don't know everything.
Got to keep getting that message across that they don't know everything. They can't see the future. They can't know exactly how your child is going to turn out.
Right, it's keeping that open mind.
I want to say thank you to Mitra for joining me on today's episode of Spina Bifida Talks. You can follow Mitra on Instagram at my_beautiful_bifida_life. And you can follow Spina Bifida Talks on Facebook at Spina Bifida Talks Podcast. And you can follow me on Instagram at Diamond in the Rough with 2 D's and on Twitter, Diamond188 with 2 D's. And subscribe to my YouTube channel, Diamond in the Rough. You will rise above all limitations once you begin to live life with the right attitude. You have to remember that limitations and challenges are all opportunities to make you grow and become a better version of yourself. Growth has to start with your mind first. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you on the next episode of Spina Bifida Talks.